Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to your Dunamos Life. I'm Dr. Pauline Dillard, Executive Director and CEO of Dunamos Center Ministries in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
And I'm Catherine Pearson. I'm the childbirth educator and wellness coach here at Dunamos Center Ministries.
Yes, and Catherine, our mission here at Dunamos Center Ministries is to bring praise, honor, and glory to God by building Christ-centered, heart-connected marriages, births, and families who have deeper relationship with God and each other.
Absolutely.
And our show is dedicated to that concept. We want people to know more about how God operates in their world, too.
Right, right, to create strong families through birth, etc.
Yeah. And so our topic today is going to be somewhat related to pregnancy and birthing and labor. And it fits our mission statement very nicely, because if moms and dads have really healthy births, they have healthier marriages, healthier families, and healthier relationship with Christ.
And healthier children probably too.
Oh, absolutely. Who can know the wonder of being healthy in the Lord.
Right?
So I know it gets a little over the top sometimes, but you know, we talk about spiritual health and wellness here as well, and that is so important as the foundation for everything else that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about health and nutrition in general, or specifically with pregnancy and childbirth, we're looking for people to really pursue the Lord and have strength and health spiritually as they are growing through this time of their life.
Absolutely. And, you know, Pauline, no one method or solution is right for everybody.
Exactly.
And that's why it's so important to really listen to the Lord and see what He would have to say.
I do, however, feel that our topic today is a little more general, because I do think it applies pretty much to all of us. And it applies very much to, I don't know about you, but sometimes I feel like something that was so obviously instinctual for who we are biblically and in the Lord, all of a sudden science catches up with God. And then everybody's in awe.
Right? Ooh, science confirmed it.
Yeah. And yet we've known all along that God designed women to function a certain way, and as they're growing babies and birthing babies, that we need the strength and the energy to do that.
Absolutely. You've taught me from the very beginning that, you know, labor and delivery is a long-term sort of process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot involved. Excuse me. Your body's going through a lot of transitions.
Right. Well, you know, I've been talking about our topic today is looking at whether it's safe for moms to be eating and drinking in labor.
Right.
And I'm a kind of a sarcastic person. I don't know how much it comes across on the radio show, but my first response is, well, duh. Okay.
Right.
But now, to me, it's kind of a duh, because God created this body and it burns energy a certain way. And when we're very active and we're doing something powerful and athletic, we're going to be burning a lot of energy and a lot of calories. And the biblical concept of birth is the mom doing this incredibly physical thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And spiritual and emotional. But it never talks about, oh, and by the way, the best way for her to do this is starved.
No, I don't think that's anywhere.
I haven't found it anywhere.
No.
But we are talking about how there's this, you know, quote-unquote big revelation out of science that's come out recently. We've been seeing it all over the social media, haven't we?
Right, yeah. There's one article in particular that talks about a study about how women in labor burn calories and use energy at rates comparable to marathon runners.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall you giving me that analogy years ago as well.
Right.
That it's like a marathon. You know, it's not a short-term little sprint. It's, you know, it can be hours.
Right.
And that's okay. You know, that's just what the process is and how God's created it to be.
Right.
But we need to be physically prepared for that and know what to do to have stamina through it.
Exactly. And so, you know, I've taught since the 1980s. I taught childbirth education in the 1980s and 1990s. And we talked a lot back then about how the healthier the mom is, of course, during the pregnancy, and we've done shows on pregnancy nutrition and different things along the way. And then the more she keeps herself well-fed, well-hydrated mm-hmm. during the labor itself, the healthier the birth is.
Right. And the, you know, hopefully more smoothly it'll go.
Right. So back even in the 1980s and 90s, we were talking about how they wanted to starve women in labor. And what was the point of it? And why were they saying that women shouldn't be eating? And back then, it was really because of you may end up with a cesarean.
Right. If I recall correctly, it was in those in that time frame that C-section was really on the increase, rising, is that right?
It was beginning in the 70s, and then it kind of plateaued for a few years at the end of the 80s and 90s for at about 21%.
Okay.
So like in the early 90s, which we thought was exorbitant.
Yeah.
And now we're up to 34%. It probably started about 1996, 1997. There was a particular doctor who was the head of the American they changed the name, Congress of OBGYN, and he just didn't like women, I'll be honest. I thought he was a misogynist, and one of his attitudes was, why not just cut it out?
Oh.
And so the C-section rate went very high,
yeah.
And he promoted standards like once a cesarean, always a cesarean. So now we've got more and more moms who have been exposed to a surgical delivery, and now their rate of being a surgery patient goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have this higher, greater concern of moms eating and drinking in labor. But let's talk about what the concern is, because a lot of people are going, well, why is there such a concern? If you have surgery, why is that a problem that you might have been eating or drinking?
Right. And it really comes down to if a cesarean is performed under general anesthesia,
yes,
there is a chance that the mom could aspirate during that, can create an infection in the lungs and a multitude of other issues, right?
Right. And aspirate means throw up.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she may throw up, it may get in the tube, because when you're under a general anesthesia, you're not breathing on your own. So the very first, one of the things they have to do is they put a breathing tube down your throat that opens a passageway to the lungs, and then they're using a machine to kind of help you breathe. Okay, so
yikes.
If you get something in there, it is going to go in the lungs.
Right.
And the lungs are not designed to handle anything but air.
Right.
So if you get any water in there, you could have a drowning effect. You get any food in there, you can get an infection in the lungs. I mean, it's not a good situation at all. Okay.
Right.
So.
And so it was from that scenario,
right,
that hospitals or doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Told women that they could not eat or drink,
right,
because of that possibility.
Right. And we have to keep in mind, when they first started doing surgical deliveries back in probably, you know, the early 1900s, they didn't have the local anesthesia options that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So every surgery was done under a general anesthesia. So, of course, they had everybody not eat for 12 hours before they had surgery, and they wouldn't let the moms in labor eat, and all of those types of things were going on. But then as you come into the 60s, we started to get, you know, 50s, 60s, more what's called regional anesthesia, like spinal blocks and things like that.
Some people might know it by the name local, is that right?
Yes. And then you come into 80s, we're starting to have epidurals. And then now the epidural is fine-tuned a little bit more. You know, I mean, so there's been quite a bit of progress as far as what type of anesthesia can be used.
Mm-hmm.
So this studies that are coming out, it looks like they actually did a meta-study as well, where they took in all the studies from the last 25 years and analyzed outcomes for that.
Right.
Yeah. And so they're coming to this conclusion that, oh, hey, not such a big problem.
Right, because we really need to start with the question, what is the chance that you'll even have a cesarean?
Well, 33 to 34%. We know that by our stats.
Unfortunately, yes. If you're in hospital, that's where it's at, and it's gone up. But then the next question after that is, okay, so maybe you do need a cesarean, but what is the chance that you'll have it under a general anesthesia?
Well, the stats that I could find is less than 5%.
Wow.
So of that 34%, less than 5% of those women may actually end up with a general anesthesia.
And that would be for an extreme emergency, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the people who run the Bradley method have stated repeatedly, if you could have a cesarean under a local anesthesia and not under general anesthesia, then it is not a necessary cesarean.
Wow. Okay, that's so pretty bold, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And so if you look at 5%, which we have said is really around what the C-section rate really should be as far as moms or babies would die, and then we're saying 5% or less are under general anesthesia. And if you look at, okay, so maybe that would be the only time that it's a necessary cesarean, we're now hitting the right numbers.
Right.
And then I could say, okay, but what if you become one of those moms and you have been eating and drinking?
That's the next question.
So what's going on there? Well, you know, when I would talk to other birth educators and some of the people that I knew back in the 1980s and 90s, a lot of people would recognize their names and we would have conversations about this. We always came down to, so what we're asking for is for the anesthesiologist to know how to do their job. Which means for them to know how to properly insert the breathing tubes. Go ahead.
Oh, well, so it sounds like the anesthesiologists are wanting a backup in case they don't do their job right. What's the right word? Insurance, sort of?
In a way, because if they insert the breathing tube correctly and the mom throws up, it doesn't go in the breathing tube. You know, it's like, or if they are watching the mom properly, they will manage that properly. So it's like, okay, do we starve every mom in labor? Because 5% of those who would go for a cesarean, so remember, it's not 5% of all laboring moms, it's 5% of the 34%.
Wow.
Okay. So now with all laboring moms, we're getting under 5%. We're
right.
really more down to 2 or 3.
Right.
Those are the moms that are going to have a breathing tube put in. And those are the moms that we would then have the concern about, do they have something in their stomach? Do they not? You know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So you also, when we were preparing for this show, you gave an analogy about skiers. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. You know, I always viewed it this way. If somebody's doing an athletic event, we're not going to starve them, first of all.
Right.
And I think all of us would say downhill skiing is pretty athletic.
Agreed.
Yeah. But we could also say over the course of a lifetime, you have like almost 100% chance of having some kind of an accident. Most skiers would admit that.
Sure.
Okay. You're going to break a bone. You're going to crash into a tree. You're going to something.
Yeah.
And you could end up at any minute becoming a surgery patient.
True.
And your risk of that happening is higher than a laboring mom.
Okay.
You know, as far as the percentage of people that ski.
Okay,
versus,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Would it seem reasonable to you to say to every skier, oh, you're going to go downhill skiing today? Okay, then as soon as you get up, you need to not eat or drink anything all day. From the time you get up and start skiing until you're done skiing, don't eat or drink anything.
That seems absurd.
It does. But Catherine, you have a higher chance of becoming a surgery patient than a laboring mother.
Wow. Well, but still, I'm going to do something athletic.
Right. And you're going to be burning calories. You're going to be dehydrating if you don't. Even out in cold weather skiing, you got all your jackets on and everything. People sweat. If you're up here in Colorado, you know it's dry.
Right.
Just in general. So your body is just losing moisture off the surface just because the humidity is so low most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're using your muscles, you're burning calories and energy, and your brain starts to get kind of weird when you're not feeding it, right?
Right. Right. You know, when I was thinking about that analogy too, I was thinking, okay, so let's say hypothetically a skier were to do that. Well, as they go through the day, by not eating and drinking, that in itself is going to increase their chances of, like you said, fuzzy brain, their muscles start getting tired,
yes.
And that in itself increases their chance of an injury
yep,
that
absolutely.
Might need surgery.
So, Catherine, we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, let's talk about how that might play out in a labor and what we see at the end of a long day of laboring.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you share with people how they can get in touch with us?
Absolutely. So on Facebook, you can search Dunamos Center Ministries. Dunamos is spelled D-U-N-A-M-A-S. On Twitter, go to @YourDunamosLife. And we would also... We would always welcome an email from you. That's dunamoslife@dunamoscenter.com. If you have any specific questions or concerns or want to chime in on our discussion about, you know, our topic today or any other topic that you've listened to, we would definitely welcome an email from you. You can also reach us by phone. That number is 719-231-7183.
And Catherine, when people go to our website at dunamoscenter.com, they can find my new book, Won't Somebody Please Hear Me, which is to help healing from cesarean trauma. And if you go to the bookstore, you'll also see that we have a study guide for the Book of Proverbs called Choices and Consequences. And you can also order our birth education books there as well. And so please feel free to explore and learn more about us.
Right. That was dunamoscenter.com.
And Dunamos is spelled D-U-N-A-M-A-S.
Yes.
We forget that sometimes, that we know how to spell it, but not everybody else does. Okay, so let's come back and talk about what happens to a laboring mom if she has a long labor and she isn't allowed to eat or drink all day.
Right, that's a good question.
So if she goes to the hospital, their answer to this is, do you remember?
Well, when I was in labor with our first child, I remember I was allowed to have, I gave birth to her in a hospital, and I was allowed ice chips and some warm broth.
Oh, okay. And then they also would put in, did they put in an IV?
An IV, yes.
Okay. And what was hooked up to that IV?
The fluid.
And what's in that fluid?
Saline?
Sugar.
Oh, right.
Uh-huh. So it's glucose water. So now they're feeding you glucose water to try to keep you hydrated, number one, because ice chips were just to keep your mouth moist, but not to actually hydrate you.
Right.
And so now they're feeding you sugar for energy, quote unquote. But we know that sugar energy goes fast.
It does.
And it also causes fuzzy brain.
Right.
So the other problem we have with that IV is that it is so much fluid if you're having a very long labor that over the course of that labor, the mom or the baby can actually end up with too much fluid on their lungs from all this IV fluid just being pumped into their system, and their body can't get rid of it fast enough.
Right, because another thing about being in a hospital is that you typically are most of the time strapped in a bed.
Yes.
So you're not moving around and exerting any, energy to reduce that fluid that's just sitting there.
And on top of that, you know, it's not good for you to just be laying in a bed. We know that blood clots develop. Even if you're in labor for 12 hours just laying there, you can develop a blood clot. And we've known of moms who have passed away after they've had their baby because the blood clot has gone into the lung and plugged it up. So now we're taking this less than 5% chance you might aspirate, throw up, and get a lung infection, and we're increasing your chance of getting a blood clot, which will go into your lung and kill you too. So it's like, which chance do we want to take?
That's what people need to ask themselves.
Right. And you need to look. People go, well, numbers don't tell you anything. They tell you a lot. They tell you a lot about what you're putting your trust in. And, you know, I need to look at numbers because it's all I have to evaluate. Do I trust this 5% or do I trust this 15 or 20 or whatever it is for a blood clot to form?
Right. And, you know, another good number to look at is, and this is, you know, a topic maybe to go into on another show, but, you know, what is the C-section rate that your doctor has?
Absolutely, because that helps you with how fast do they jump to a cesarean. So now if you're eating and you're drinking and you're staying healthy, you're staying strong, you're staying fully hydrated, you're getting protein in there for this labor, you have already decreased your chance of a cesarean at all.
Right.
Okay, much less under this general anesthesia.
Right.
Now, I knew a lot of women, when they started labor, especially if their water broke, they were put on this 24-hour clock, like you have to have your baby in this 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So they go into the hospital. They're not allowed to eat or drink anything. They're put on this IV, so now we're not moving around. We don't have gravity helping us.
And we have extra fluids.
We have extra fluids. We don't have the right amounts of protein in there to help the muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know the muscle are meat structures, and those need protein bases, not just sugar,
mm-hmm.
to function properly. The other thing we're not getting is, believe it or not, salt, which our muscles contract and expand on what are called sodium gates. So we need to eat normal foods with salt so that the muscles can contract. What is your uterus trying to do?
Well, and I was just going to point out, the uterus is what?
It's a muscle. Yeah. And it contracts, mm-hmm. and expands and contracts. Mm-hmm. And so you need the proteins. You need the salts. You need the calories for energy, and you need the fluids.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine you're laying in bed. You've got the IV on, maybe a fetal monitor, as you talked about, being mm-hmm. strapped down. I'm not up. I'm not moving around. I'm not eating. I'm not drinking. I'm in labor for 24 hours. I get to 10 centimeters, and then?
Yeah, let's say hypothetically you make it that long without
right.
very much food or drink. Now what do you have to do?
You have to push.
You have to push a baby out.
Right. But what happens to a lot of women at that point?
But if you've gone through that, most likely you want to give up.
Well, the uterus itself poops out. Basically, it stops working as hard because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't have the food to do the work. You haven't had the movement, and you have not been able to really work with it. And over, I knew of cases where the mom got to 10 centimeters, started pushing, the uterus pooped out,
yeah,
and they had a cesarean.
Ugh.
When really they just needed to be eating and drinking and sleeping between contractions if they're able, and then the uterus would have stayed busy all the way to the end.
Well, and it would have stayed nourished.
Absolutely.
Too, right? I mean,
yeah.
That nourishment that you're, even if you're only putting in a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that nourishment your body is putting towards that uterus.
It's huge.
To work.
Right. So now I'm all excited. I'm 10 centimeters. I'm good to go. And nothing. You know, it's like there's no energy there at all.
Right.
And it's to me one of the saddest things, because then they do a cesarean or they put an epidural on and they put Pitocin on. And this is where that marathon runner analogy would come in.
Mm-hmm.
If you ran 25.75 miles of the marathon, but somebody came at that last quarter of a mile and said, now we're going to carry you over the finish line, would you feel like you had completed the race?
It would be kind of discouraging and I don't know. I think I'd feel a little disappointed in myself.
Yeah. And I would feel, but what if they insisted? Let's say you have to run that 25.75 miles with no water, no snacks.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us have you watched a race on TV and you see them handing them food, handing them snacks, handing them water as they're running? And they have stations for that.
Right. It's totally built into a marathon that there's going to be little checkpoints
mm-hmm.
with nourishment.
So people might say to me, well, what's a checkpoint? Well, you know, we kind of put it at about 12 ounces of fluid every hour or two when you're in really active labor.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're taking that much fluid in, what do you need to do also?
Go to the bathroom.
Yeah. You need to pee it out.
Right.
Because if your bladder gets full and you haven't been using it, it might lock up on you or cramp, and then it's blocking the passage for the baby.
Right.
So, you know, every hour or so, go sit on the toilet and have that come out.
Mm-hmm.
And then food-wise.
Right. One thing I was going to have us discuss a little bit is, maybe there's a listener that says, well, when I was in labor, I didn't feel like eating or drinking, or I felt nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we respond to that?
Well, when it comes to the fluids, I just feel like it's not optional.
Right.
Because a lot of times people feel nauseous because they don't have enough fluid. And so when they're starting to dehydrate, they'll start to feel nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
I was with one mom who was like that, and she was throwing up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the midwife came, the midwife actually mixed up a drink with electrolytes in it and made her chug it.
Wow.
And then she threw it up. And then she mixed another one, and she made her chug it, and then she threw it up.
Oh.
And she kept doing that until the mom stopped throwing it up.
The mom's body was taking in a little bit.
Uh-huh, of the fluid.
Uh-huh.
She wasn't, like, throwing up all of it.
Okay.
And then once her body absorbed enough, it calmed down.
Oh.
Okay, then we were able to give her some cheese or some apple or some peanut butter, you know, foods that are high in energy but are quick and easy to eat.
Right, and relatively easy for the stomach to digest,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, like, peanut butter, your body can break down quickly and easily. And
yeah, if you're not allergic.
And, yeah.
We talked about that before. But anyway, the point is that I always would tell people, make the food bite size as
mm-hmm.
well. So she can just pick up a bite and eat it really quickly between contractions.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you hand her a sandwich.
Yeah. No, not going to happen.
But if I take a little piece of cheese and maybe I put a little piece of ham or something on it and it's one bite.
Right.
She can pop that in her mouth. She can chew it down.
Mm-hmm. And even if it's only one bite at a time, that's still better than nothing.
Right. Broth. Because it's going to absorb the calories and that as she's going as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found that once the moms are hydrated well, if they stay hydrated well, they are actually less likely to have any vomiting in their labor,
mm-hmm.
even though we know a lot of women will right before transition. But at the same time, if they're kept hydrated and well-fed, they're less likely to have that happen.
Yeah. So we've talked today about this whole issue and how it seems to have stemmed from a historical thing that's not even a problem anymore.
Yeah,
or at least
pretty much. Yeah.
Radically minimized.
Yeah, it's like barely a problem.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's still there, but it's not like it was 100 years ago or
yeah.
something like that. Before we finish up, I do want to say a quick word about dads and eating in labor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've all heard the jokes or seen the jokes where the dad faints when the baby comes out. And
right.
I just want to say that is usually because the dad has not been eating and drinking during the labor. So his
true.
Blood sugar drops. His adrenaline's high. The baby comes out. The baby's okay. And he's like, whew, my mom and my wife and my baby are both alive. His adrenaline drops. He doesn't have any protein behind it. He's dehydrated. Bam, he hits the floor. Okay, so
it may have come across in a comical way,
right.
like on TV or whatever, but it really can be. You've probably seen it happen, huh?
So if you're helping a friend in labor or, you know, a family friend or a relative,
mm-hmm.
make sure the dads are eating. You know, one of my biggest jobs was I'd say to the dad, what kind of sandwich do you want? And they'd go, oh, no, I'm fine. Just take care of her. And I'm like, oh, no, you are eating. So what is it you want? You know, and they're like, what? And I'm like, don't give me that. Just tell me what you want because you are going to eat
mm-hmm.
because I don't want you passing out at the end of the labor.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, okay. And I put food in front of them, and they're like gobbling it down. They're so hungry. And they don't realize how hungry they are because
right.
they're so focused on working with
and
the labor.
And there's so much adrenaline going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I hope this was really helpful for people to understand, you know, the process and how important it is to keep eating and drinking.
Well, and I think, too, really quick before we wrap up, is that really sit and pray about it.
Yeah.
Not just pray about what to eat or drink, but how and where you're going to labor.
Exactly.
That's a big topic for another show maybe as well. But it's important to consider, do you want to be at home where you're allowed to eat and drink at leisure? Or do you want to be in a hospital where there's more restrictions and you have to combat with
right.
their staff? Just really think and pray about that.
Exactly. Absolutely. So before we finish up, I just want to remind our listeners that we are donation supported. Even though we are not a 501c3, we are a Colorado registered charity.
Mm-hmm.
And your donations help us to bring praise, honor, and glory to God by building those marriages, those births, and those families who will have a deeper relationship with God and each other.
That's right.
And just a couple weeks ago, I had the privilege of praying with a young couple in my office to come to relationship with Christ.
Aww.
So we're also bringing souls and families together with Jesus
praise
as
God.
Well. So please consider that. Go to our website, dunamoscenter.com. and make a donation there. And I'm Dr. Pauline Dillard.
And I'm Catherine Pearson.
Thank you for listening.